Okay, so today we'll take a break from Tanya. We're going to do something on Tisha B'Av. Just a little bit of introduction. So we know that Tisha B'Av has two almost opposite themes running with it at the same time. On the surface, in a revealed way, in a conscious way, Tisha B'Av is a day of mourning. It's a day of pain. It's a day of remembering the Churban. That's the halachic way of observing Tisha B'Av, which comes with all the restrictions of fasting and not doing all the things you're not allowed to do on Yom Kippur. The five afflictions, as we call it, not wearing shoes and so on and so forth. Sitting on a low stool. Kinnus, we read Eicha, which is a very sad part of Tanakh. And we read Kinnus in the morning, which means we... I don't know how you could translate Kinnus, but they're very sad paragraphs of describing the destruction, and the Churban, and so on. Nowadays it's common, like we do, to intersperse them with lots of explanations and things like that, because it can get, it's very difficult language, and it can get, you know, drag on a bit. Incidentally, just, I should just insert here, on Sunday morning, I'll send it out on the WhatsApp, we're going to do what we always do, have a minyan. We're actually doing it at Yeshiva this year, because we're still in the middle of the Churban here. But we're going to do what we did last year, and the explanations and things that I did in the morning davening throughout the Kinnus, me and Rabbi Levi, we'll do on Zoom as well. So you can, if you're at home and you're in the mood, you can click in, tune in. On the other hand, we know about Tisha B'Av, there's also this underlying positivity. In a very strange way. In Eicha, there's a reference to Tisha B'Av, and it says, Kara Olai Moyed, that Hashem designated, or the day of Tisha B'Av, as a Moyed. Moyed means a Yontif. That's what the Yom Chagim are called that. They're called Moadim L'Simcha, right? So it says Moyed, it's a Yontif, which is the reason halachically why on Tisha B'Av of all days, we don't say Tachnun, which is a thing you normally skip out when it's a happy day, right? We also know that the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash actually took place on Tisha B'Av afternoon. You know that? Yeah, that's why the halacha is that the laws of the 9 days, which we're currently in, need actually be extended till the next, to the 10th of Av, midday. It's like the laundry we're not supposed to do and seem like that, it actually continues on till Monday afternoon, midday. Right? Not drinking meat, not eating meat, not drinking wine, all that. That extends why? Because actually we are taught that the Beis Hamikdash, although we say it was destroyed on Tisha B'Av, it was set alight on Tisha B'Av afternoon, but actually burnt mainly on the 10th of Av. Okay, and the Gemara discusses, if that's the case, why was it made? Tisha B'Av, why not 10th of Av? Because it says the beginning of the pain is the hardest, like with it. Setting it alight was like, that was the hardest part. Okay. And yet we find a very fascinating thing. We find that on Tisha B'Av afternoon, not many of them, but some laws of mourning are relaxed, which is almost counterintuitive. Like, for example, in the shul, we take off the curtain of the Aron Kodesh by night and by day in the morning. For mincha, we put it back. We don't wear tefillin in the morning, we wear tefillin in the afternoon. We sit in a low stool on Tisha B'Av only until midday. From midday, you can sit in a regular chair. You're not supposed to do business on Tisha B'Av if you can help it, but if you need to do it, after midday. Normally, in most communities, I think Krinsky also, if I'm not mistaken, people need to buy things for the end of the fast. Normally, the stores open up on midday. They don't open up in the morning. That's why it's supposed to be that, right? After midday. It says, if you're preparing a meal, it says the people preparing a meal for Matzah Tisha B'Av, you should try and do it only in the afternoon. House cleaning, that kind of thing, only in the afternoon. Otherwise, all the other laws Tisha B'Av continue on a whole day, but there is a difference between before morning and midday. Why? So there's a fascinating chazal that on the afternoon of Tisha B'Av, some of the hidden part of Tisha B'Av, the Yontif of Tisha B'Av, the Geula of Tisha B'Av, comes out. Fascinating Chazal. I think it's a Talmud Yerushalmi, if I'm not mistaken. Going back to the story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, which is quickly the story, just to give a context. So we know that before the Churban, it was a really terrible thing going on in Yerushalayim. The Romans had laid siege around Yerushalayim, led by the general Vespasian, Aspasianus, who later became the emperor. There was a tremendous fight between the Chachamim, the great sages of the Sanhedrin, who saw with Ruach HaKodesh that they must not upset the whole thing, they must not fight back. It's doomed. In other words, Yerushalayim will fall. Fighting back and rebelling will just make it worse. But then there was a bunch of young zealots, it says in the Gemara, calls it biryonim, like troublemakers, rebels, whatever. They took over Yerushalayim and they wanted to fight back. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai decided he needs to get out of Yerushalayim and go and talk to the general, Vespasian. Somehow he's got to get an audience with Vespasian to try to save a little bit, something, right? So, tall story in the Gemara. It was hard for him to get out because these rebels were guarding the gates. They wouldn't let them out. So he had to fake his own death, and he had his Talmidim carry him out as if he was going to a funeral. They were taking him to his funeral because the cemetery was outside of the city limits and so on. Okay. Eventually he comes to Vespasian, and he addresses him as the emperor, as the melech, as the king. And the king says to him, the Vespasian says to him, you're guilty of death, really, on two accounts. First of all, if I'm the king, where were you till now? Now you come? And second of all, I'm not the king. He was just a general. He wasn't the Caesar. He wasn't the king. And therefore, it's an insult to the king what you've done. While they were talking, a message came from Rome to tell them that the emperor died and he was appointed as an okay. Okay. So he says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, what do you want? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked him three requests. He didn't ask him to save Yerushalayim because he saw that it's not going to happen. Yerushalayim, unfortunately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided Yerushalayim was going to fall. But he wanted to save Torah learning. This is a famous story. It's a very, very famous thing. It's a wonderful thing, actually. It's an amazing thing. So he said, give me at least the Sanhedrin, Yavne v'chachomel. Let the Sanhedrin move to Yavne. Even before the destruction. And then he said he wanted to save the house of Rabban Gamliel, because Rabban Gamliel would be the head of the Sanhedrin. And he asked something else about Rav Tzadik, who was the elder sage at the time, that he'd been sick for very long. He wanted a doctor to heal him, whatever the case was. Okay. Essentially, save Torah learning, which is the secret to the eternity of the Jewish people. Right? So the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, but at least Torah was going to thrive. Okay, so why am I saying this? Because when the Churban happened, when the destruction happened, on the day of Tisha B'Av, the Chachamim weren't there. They had left already. They were in Yavne. And the Gemara tells a story of one of the sages, who had a cow, and he had a neighbor who was a non-Jew, but a little bit of a psychic, it looks like. And they were in the afternoon, on Tisha B'Av afternoon, and the sage's cow let out a very big, I don't know how you say it, a moo, like a moo. You what? A bella, that's how you call it in English? Yeah. So the Arab, it says the Arab, Arabi calls him, not Arabs like today, but it means like a native, a non-Jewish person. Turned to him and he says, your cow just bellowed, your Beis HaMikdash has just been destroyed. As soon as he said that, the cow let out a second bellow, to which the non-Jew responded, and he said, that second bellow means Mashiach has just been born. Noilad Mashiach Shel Yisrael. Obviously, it doesn't mean the person is going to be Mashiach, because that would be very old by now, but it means the concept of Mashiach. In other words, at the highest point of Hashem's anger, when he let the Beis HaMikdash be destroyed, the seeds of redemption were already there. Which fits into what it says in Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says one of the reasons that the Avelus, the morning relaxes on the afternoon, is what it says that the Gemara tells that actually Hashem did a tremendous kindness. Hashem was angry with us. He was not happy with how we were. And he poured his anger on stones instead of killing us. Right? So it fits in other words, the Am Yisrael is eternal. Hashem destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, but we are still here. And we are still here in a way where it's all going to come back and the Geula will come. So that's another example where you see that the seeds of Geula, the whole idea of Geula, the theme of redemption, is not something from the future. It's something that began on Tisha B'Av. That's why it says Mashiach will come, Tisha B'Av will be a tremendous Yantiv, right? And Tisha B'Av is known as Mashiach's birthday. So again, Tisha B'Av works on two levels. It works on two levels that on the one hand, it is the day of the Churban, the destruction, day of pain, day of all the national tragedies, everything that happened to Klal Yisrael throughout the ages, all has to do with Tisha B'Av. I had this thought yesterday, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but even with regard to the current war, interesting thing. It might sound a bit political, but anyway, it's what it is. Because we know that the Spanish Inquisition was on Tisha B'Av. The fall of the Warsaw Ghetto was on Tisha B'Av, I think. Pretty sure. The breakout of the First World War, which ultimately led to the Second World War, broke on Tisha B'Av. The expulsion of the Jews from England happened on Tisha B'Av. Right? Did I say Spanish Inquisition? Yeah, too. So I was thinking about this current terrible Churban that we have, which is also part of Tisha B'Av. So actually, if you really think about it, it happens, didn't start on October the 7th, it started in 2025 with Gush Katif, with the disengagement, which people thought it would be a wonderful thing, but it's actually a terrible thing, right? When did that happen? So it actually happened on the 10th of Av, but it was supposed to happen on Tisha B'Av, and they responded at second day. So that's interesting. Also connected with Tisha B'Av. Anyway, I'm not sure if it's accurate or not, but I think it's something in that. Something in that. Okay.
Sorry, Rabbi, is there a reason that it was Arabi that told the sage?
Like, could be. I'm not sure. I've never looked into it.
Right?
Yeah, no, it must be a reason. Maybe because the idea of the Gula is that even the non-Jew will recognize it as redemption ultimately. Okay. So these two layers of Tisha B'Av have to both be connected to. On the one hand, of course, we have to mourn the destruction, but at the same time, we have to be filled with hope. That Tisha B'Av is, even this year, Mr. Shem, won't be a Tisha B'Av. We'll have Mashiach, we'll be Yontif, right? So in that context, I want to share with you a mimer that I learned. I learned it this week, actually. I'm going to show you part of the mimer. It's a mimer that the Rebbe said in Tav Shem Amidala, I think. Yeah. 1974, and it talks about the whole idea that through the Churban, through the Golus, and transforming the Golus and transforming the darkness into light, the light obviously will be a lot stronger than it was before, right? That's the same famous concept. Then, and dafka through the descent, dafka through going down, we come up much stronger, as we have this idea, the famous idea of Chassidus, of Yerido Tzorechaliya, that every descent is for the purpose of a greater ascent, right? And then in the Maimer, the Rebbe connects this with a something that the Tzemach Tzedek says, and he applies it to a different pasuk in Eicha. So let me tell you what the Tzemach Tzedek says. On Tisha B'Av, we read Eicha, right? Eicha. Eicha was authored by the way, but with Yirmiyahu HaNavi. It's a story of the destruction. Actually, it's a story of both destructions, even the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash, and the terrible things that happened there. But actually, it was not written historically. It was written prophetically. Right? Because Yirmiyahu HaNavi lived before the Churban. I mean, he was there by the Churban, but he gave it to one of the kings of Yehuda to warn the people, this is coming. Right? And he wrote Eicha, and everything it says in Eicha happened, unfortunately. Right? It's written in the past tense, but actually it's not. It's written for the future. So it's full of pain. If you read Eicha, it's like, yeah. It's particularly particularly painful when it's like current. Or was current, still current, right? It's not finished yet. It's all the Nisim and everything, but it's still, yeah. But the Torah is eternal. So the question that Tzemach Tzedek sort of addresses, and other tzaddikim, Rakam Levi Yitzchok, about Ditchev and so on, is like, so what's Eicha going to mean when Mashiach comes? Right? So he says that Eicha needs to be understood in two layers. There's a way to learn Eicha, not the simple pshat, but there's a way to read Eicha that it's all unbelievable. it's actually tremendous great, tremendous greatness. And Samach Tzedek uses it and he explains the very first pasuk of Eicha. In fact, he explains the word Eicha. The word Eicha means how could this be, or alas, right? Because the Eicha starts with Eicha Yashva Badad. How could it be that you're talking about Yerushalayim, that it's sitting in isolation? Ha'ir Abasi Am, the city that was so filled of people, Hoysok Alman has become like a widow. And so on, right? And Samach Tzedek takes that pasuk and he says, similar to what we learn about the curses in the Torah. Twice in the Torah, right, we have the Tzechacha, the curse that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to the Jewish people, the ones in Bechukosai, in Vayikra, and the ones that we learned, read just before Rosh Hashanah, in Kisavoy, the ones that Moshe Rabbeinu gave, which were even longer and stronger, right? And then the Mefarshim also say that really the Tzechacha is really hidden blessings that are just cloaked in a cryptic way, and if you know how to read them and you know how to understand them, it's actually a tremendous bracha, just so high. We can't really relate to it, like we talked about in Natanya, can't relate to it in a normal, sort of understandable way, right? So the Tzemach Tzedek does the same thing with the first pasuk of Eicha, and he talks about the word of Eicha and how it refers to different layers of it, which we'll do now as well. Anyway, okay, so the Rebbe says, if that's the case, it must be in the whole Eicha. It's not only about the first pasuk, it must be the whole Eicha like that. And the Rebbe therefore takes another pasuk in Eicha and does the same thing, which we're going to learn now. Okay, because it will help us a little bit connect to the depth of Tisha B'Av, to what's behind the scenes in Tisha B'Av, which is not separate, by the way. The simple, just like by Tisha B'Av, what the superficial Tisha B'Av is like and what the real Tisha B'Av is like are not disconnected, they're two different things. The Geula that's embedded in Tisha B'Av will come from the Tisha B'Av, will come from the Geulas. The same thing with how we learn the Pasuk, we'll see. Okay, so if you're on the page that I think I gave you, can I see the page I gave you? Does it have a paragraph base at the bottom? You got to go to the front page.
Yeah,
it does. Yeah, okay. We'll start from there, and we'll learn mainly the highlighted parts. Okay, it says the Rebbe like this. But keep the chumash open. Keep the chumash with you, because we'll look at the pasuk in a second. Inyan zeh, this idea, shadafka lida yirida. This concept we just said before, the Rebbe said mentioned previously in the Maimer, that through the descent, boim le'ilui godol yoser, you come to a greater elevation. Mudgish gamba pasuk. This can be emphasized also in the pasuk. The pasuk is referring to is the second chapter of Eicha, the very first pasuk, where it says Eicha yoiv ba'apoy. I'll translate it in a minute. We'll look at it properly. Shem Megillas Eicha. Ubehegdim with the following introduction. Tehine yoduat known mashakosav Tzemach Tzedek. The Tzemach Tzedek wrote Berushim Moisev al Megillas Eicha in his notes on Eicha al Derech. He said it's similar to the concept that the Chumash, Shaklolo Yehovchul Lebrachas, that the curses will be transformed to blessings. Im Kein Yeshloima, similarly, we can say the same thing. Gam Kein A'Eicha Le'Aliyos. We have to know how to read Eicha as an elevation, not as a destruction. Mavayr Ba'Rucha, and over there the Tzemach Tzedek explains on the next page at length, as Apsukim Sheba Eicha Yoshva. The first few psukim are really the malusa. They really mean something beautiful, positive, and great. Says the Rebbe, "Umimasha kostav shezeu al derech shaklal shiavchul lebrachis." This is the Tzemach Tzedek says that the way I'm going to learn Eicha can be compared to the concept that we try and translate the curses of the psukim in the Chumash to blessing. Muvan, we can understand shekashem shapirush lemalusa shebetoychecha shebetoyras moishe, just like the. We say that the positive translation of the curses in the Torah, b'sefer Vayikra in Vayikra, and b'sefer Dvarim, it's not only one or two of the psukim, it's u'b'chol psukim shebo. It's in all of the psukim. The entire section of the curses in Vayikra and Dvarim must have a positive translation. Therefore, must say keinu gam b'negel megilas Eicha. You must say the same thing with Eicha. Who wrote Eicha? Shekosuv Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu wrote Eicha. Ubifrat, and specially, the fi amavur be Kabbalah, that it says in Kabbalah, she Yirmiyahu ha-yogilgul nitzut shal Moshe. The Yirmiyahu was a reincarnation of the spark of Moshe Rabbeinu's neshama. Which is why, v'lochen, shneim nislamu be'echa, that's why they both use the word Eicha. And if you know, but in this week's Parsha, Dvarim, Moshe Rabbeinu was the first one to say Eicha. He said, Eicha esol levadi, how can I bear to carry all you lot alone? Your quarrels, your burdensomes, all this kind of stuff, right? Therefore, since Yirmiyo and Moshe are connected, therefore we must say Shapirush Lamal Yuso Loyraka Psuka Echa Yoshua. Therefore, this at the Tzemach Tzedek positively translates the Psukim at the beginning of Echa. In a positive way, it's not just the first Psukim. Ella began the Psukim the Echa Yov, it's with this Pasuk also. Ubachol Megillah Seich, in fact, it's about the whole Megillah of Echa. The whole Megillah. But this Shvarov says the same thing, and he also gives a few examples, but they were saying, really, there is a Eicha on a different level, which obviously will be the Eicha when Mashiach comes, right? But we have a glimpse of it now. So, before we go further in the Maimer, take the Chumash and turn to page 1274. Where Eicha is printed. Yeah. 1274, two thirds down the page, the beginning of the second chapter. You see that? Where it says Eicha Yoiv B'Apoy. Huh? Yeah. So it says the pasuk. You got it, Yonah? Yeah. Eicha Yirmiyahu says, Eicha, how could it be, or alas, Yoiv B'Apoy Hashem Espastzir. How could Hashem, be'apoy, with his anger, yo'iv, you look in the English, it says clouded. How in his anger did he cloud? We'll see what that means. Es bas tzion, the daughter of tzion, meaning Hashem, Yerushalayim. Hishlich mishomayim eretz. He cast down from heaven to earth. Tiferes Yisrael, the glory of the Jewish people. Raglov, and he does not remember his footstool, which I think is a reference to the Beis Hamikdash, b'yoyim apoy, on the day of his anger. That's the possible way it's understood in the destruction. Now, it says like this. So go back to the Maimer. And so the way yoiv means to make dark. But it comes to the word av. Av is one of the words used in the Chumash and Tanakh for a cloud. Right? There's a few different ways of seeing clouds in the Chumash. There's Anan, which is cloud, Arafel, which means a thick cloud. Ov also, Ov means, like, the word Ov means thick. It means like a cloud, when you can't see the sunlight, it makes it dark. So, right? So the Novi is saying, Eicha, how can it be? Alas, Yoiv, Hashem made it dark. For the Rashi says, right? He says like this, but in Yenu, he says, the Hine Rashi, Pirish, Yoiv Ya'afil. Afeilo, the word, you know, you have choshech, darkness, and afeilo is a thick darkness. Afeilo is a word in Hebrew, classical Hebrew. It means very bad darkness. So Rashi says, what does Yirmiyahu mean? How could you, yo'iv ba'apoy, that you made yo'iv a cloud, it means how did you make it dark for us, right? Da'at Omar, k'moy da'at Omar, like the Pasuk says, there's a Pasuk in Malachim in Tanakh, where there was a sudden very, very big rain or something. It says, Hashomayim hiskadru bo'ovim. The heaven suddenly became knotted up, like very dark and darkened by thick clouds. Now, Tzemach Tzedek explains, so let's understand what this means. So let me give a bit of an introduction outside. Tzemach Tzedek explains like this, you know, that the world is created with 10 spheres, right? That's how Hashem created the world. Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, and so on. Ultimately, however, the tool of creation was the lowest sphere, Malchus. Yeah? Malchus is like the feminine. It receives, we've talked about this many times, it receives what it is given, it processes it, and it gives birth, right? So Malchus has an interesting aspect to it. What, like a king, the same thing. A king is able to relate to the nation. He takes the knowledge, the experience, the insight, the foresight, and he delivers it to the nation in ways that they can understand. The king himself is aloof, he's transcendent, he's higher. But he has that king, the leadership quality is to apply something. In other words, it's like we talk about this many times, like this is the whole idea of Malchus, which is also feminine, the idea of femininity. right? Which is, sometimes I can have very intense feelings of chesed within me, or gvura, whatever the case is, and yet it doesn't get delivered because it's in me and it doesn't has no doesn't it's not relatable to the outside, right? So the power of malchus, which is really a power of tzimtzum in a way, where you can break it up into different sections, like you can take it, make it relatable, right? So there's what we call malchus of kedusha. Hashem created the world even before the world was messed up, was full of klippa through the sins and everything, right? There is a malchus which is a malchus of kedusha, malchus of atzilus, right? Which is still the process of tzimtzum, but it's a tzimtzum in order to deliver, or a tzimtzum in order to teach. It's like the Rav, right? It's like the person teaching Gemara. We've talked about this before, same idea. When the Rav teaches the Talmud, so obviously there's a process of tzimtzum, but there's also a revelation. The Talmud is learning Gemara. He's learning. So he's getting the revelation of the Rav. He's getting the revelation of the teacher, right? So even the very first day that the world was created, the world that says Al-Milui Nira, it was a physical world. Yes, it was a limited, finite world, but it was a world of holiness, right? It was still created with Malchus, but more the Malchus of Kedusha. He says, let me just finish the introduction. There's also a concept. So what is Malchus? Malchus processes, makes it relatable, and then gives. Malchus of Kedusha gives Kedusha. Watered down Kedusha so we can relate to it, but it gives Kedusha. The teacher teaching the child Gemara is processing the Gemara to relate to the 5-year-old child, but he's teaching Gemara. Child is learning Torah. There is a concept of Malchus of Klippa, where Hashem created the forces of Klippa, as we know. And Klippa also is a structure like everything else. Part of the structure of Klippa is having the Malchus of Klippa. In other words, it's the part of Klippa that feeds Klippa to everyone else and to everything else. When does that happen? What happens is, we know that Klippa, it doesn't say all this in the mind, but I'm just giving you the background. Klippa is created with a very minimal life dose. I think we learned this in Tanya. Klippa exists because we have to have free choice. The problem is that when we do things that are no good, when we do things that are against Hashem's will, or whatever the case is, or even just unholy stuff, we embolden the Klippa. The Klippa, what happens is, we cause for the Kedusha flow to go via the Klippa. And then the Klippa emboldens. Right? And the Klippa emboldens, it gives a lot of Klippa. Right? Says Tzemach Tzedek, the third line in that gimel, right, in the paragraph. Mavaya Tzemach Tzedek. Then when we talk about in Eicha, we complain, we cry that Hashem made it dark for the Jewish people, He clouded the Jewish people. What does that mean? Says Tzemach Tzedek, She'inyin Ovim V'Oifel, that cloud, that darkness that we're referring to, Yeshleimar, the Ha'inu Mashi Yorda Malchus the Kedusha, that the Malchus of Kedusha came down, lehashpia, to give a flow, but Malchus to Klippas Noiga, into the Malchus of Klippas Noiga, even though it's Klippas Noiga, but it's emboldened Malchus, it's emboldened Klippa. Meaning, that's what the Pasuk says, Eicha Yoiv, how could it have made it cloudy, meaning she yorda bastion. It says over there that the bastion, it says, how did you make it so dark in your anger? Es bastion, the daughter of Tzion. At first, Yerushalayim, it refers to the Jewish people, but also it also refers to the Malchus of Kedusha. Bas, a daughter, is a feminine. It's Bas Tzion. The daughter of Tzion means the recipient of Tzion, which is Malchus, Malchus of Kedusha. And we're bemoaning the fact that Malchus Kedusha got entangled in the darkness. It descended into real darkness. What's real darkness? Klippa. Right? Ad she'eino yecheila lalos, to the point that it seems impossible for it to be extracted, it's impossible to be elevated, right? Vush sholish klippas, and even it goes even worse. It goes into the three complete badly klippas, right? Shalemato meklippas noiga, lower than klippas noiga even. So that's a simple pshat of the pasuk. That's the golus reading of the pasuk. It's the golus reading of the pasuk. That's what happened, right? Ah. Ach, im kol zeh, nevertheless, al yidei tshuva, with tshuva, yuchlo lalas, it can be elevated again. Umamshik, and he continues. Ve'aldeya tzedakah, that through tshuva, through tzedakah, all these things. It says, it's a pasuk in Yeshaya Hanovi. It says, v'zorach b'choshech oyrecha. The pasuk says like this, it's a very interesting pasuk. It says, your light will shine in the darkness. V'afeiloscha, and your very deep darkness, katzoharoyim, will be like the afternoon. Now we need to understand what that means. What does it mean, your very dark, your thick darkness will be like the afternoon? If it's like the afternoon, it's not darkness. Right? What does that mean? So the simple meaning, it means like this. She mebchinas afeilah haniskeres leil, that very bad darkness that we talked about before. From that darkness will emerge an oyer gadol. Val derech, similar to what we said before, or we always say, Yisro in the oyer dafka machoshech. When darkness is transformed, it's transformed in a very big way. In a greater way, right? The light that comes from darkness is greater than light on its own. The Oznemar, then it says, listen to this, there's a pasuk in also Yishaya Navi. It says like this, Mi Eile. Now, listen carefully to this pasuk. So we're gonna emerge from that darkness that can happen at the destruction. We're gonna do tshuva. We're gonna be transformed. And we transform the darkness into light. And what are we going to become like? There's a pasuk in Yeshaya Hanavi that says like this. It says, Mi eile ko'ov tu'ufeno. Who are these people, in a positive way, talking about the Eden, that floats like a cloud? Again, now that's all of a sudden a cloud just became a good thing for some reason. Right? V'omur Azal and Chazal say in the Medrash, that Zohu, if the Yidden will have the right schus, ma'alon umroimamon ka'av. Hashem will elevate them and exalt them like a cloud. Shenem, like it says in that pasuk, mi'eila ka'av lufen. Who are these people that are so great that they're like clouds, like floating clouds? Now, it's all mixed up, because just before we talked about Hashem creating a cloud, which means he made it so dark, the Malchus of Kedusha came down into Klippa, even bad Klippa, and we're all messed up. Now suddenly, we're going to do tshuva, we're going to transform the darkness into light, and going to become like what? Like a cloud. What does that mean? Do you understand the question? So we'll read in the words, because it's a very beautiful way he says it, but let me just give you something related to what we learned a while ago. We actually find in Tehillim and Chassidus, explained very, very often, that there's actually two types of clouds. This is the point here. Two types of cloud. Meaning, there's two types of darkness, essentially. There's one darkness, which is the cloud we talked about before, which is its sole function is to block revelation, to block light. There's light. The light has potential to be revealed. Maybe not all of it, maybe some of it, depends to who, depends when, and so on, right? Some of that light is actually hidden from us because actually it's too high for us, but it's still light, its goal is still revelation, right? And then there's another darkness, even higher than we spoke before about the hidden blessings. There's a higher darkness. In other words, last time I explained to you, there's a darkness that it's a light which is too high for us, so for us it's dark. But it's still light, or it still can be revealed at some stage. There's a different darkness that it's called dark, not because it's concealed, but because it's transcendent, it's mysterious. It's Hashem Himself. That Hashem Himself is not light. Light means, in other words, the real essence of Hashem. In Tehillim, there's a passage that says, Yoshes Choshech Sisrei. Hashem places darkness as his dwelling place. What does that mean? When we talk about Or in Chassidus, the light of Hashem, even at the highest level, it's not the essence of Hashem. It's something which Hashem is now revealed, something that eventually can be revealed. Yet, we talk about the light that was there before the world was created. Obviously, it was not even possible to create a world. That's what had to be the famous Tzimtzum, where Hashem removed all his light and drew down a very thin light of light, whatever, all those things, Tzimtzum, all business. But once you say something's light, it means it's revealed. It's revealed, it's outside of Hashem. It's revealed to something else. Right? Even think about it in terms of a person. As much as of yourself that you can expose to someone else, it never is the real you. That's what it is. It's not your essence. You can't. If it's you, it means it's not revealable. Not because it's hidden, but because it's transcendent. It's too high for revelation. It has no connection to the outside world, the outside reality. Yeah? In fact, it's not even light. I don't know, it's not light, it's not darkness. It's the essence of Hashem who transcends light and darkness. Not light, it's not dark, it's Him. Everything comes from Him. Light comes from Him, darkness comes from Him. What is Him? Not light, not darkness. Mystery, mysterious, Him. We call it darkness because it's not revealable. Yeah? The guy says in the Maimon, three lines from the bottom. Moka Machen is boy, in a different place, it's explained. Sheshtei Bechinus Ova Ona. There's two types of clouds. Ha'achas per Klipper. The one cloud is in Klipper. Moshe Kosovo Mechavis Yecheskel. Like Yecheskel in his celestial vision, he describes a vision of Hashem's chariot and everything, but he also describes the Klipper. In fact, the source of knowing that there's four types of clippers, three very bad ones and one neutral one, comes from Yecheskel. And he says, Ruach Sa'ora Bo Min HaTzofen, I see an unbelievable wind coming from the north, Onon Godol, a big cloud, and he uses three expressions of cloud there, and it's the three impure clippers. That's the one type of cloud. But there's a second cloud. Be'ashniyah Be'gedusha, the second one is a holy cloud. Ma'oid Naila, it's so high. To the point where it says, for example, it says, "Well, Yochel Moshe Lovel Oil Moed." It says there was a pasuk that says that when the Mishkan was built, Moshe Rabbeinu Khan was unable to approach the Mishkan kishochan olav ha'anon, because the cloud was there. So why couldn't he approach it? If it was just hid, if it was just hiddenness, just concealment, if it was a blockage of Hashem, that's all it was. Moshe Rabbeinu can penetrate that. No, he couldn't do that because the greater cloud was there. He couldn't engage with that. Or a different way, we find by Matan Torah, where Hashem Mamash let Moshe Rabbeinu in the inner chambers, it says, Moshe Nigash El Ha'arofel. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he went up the mountain of Har Sinai, what was there? An Arofel, a very thick cloud. And Moshe Rabbeinu went into that cloud. Because that was... No, it was. It wasn't Klippah. Because that we'll see, at Matan Torah, there was an exposure to the essence of Hashem. In a temporary way. Shari Inyan Zeshul Moshe Nigal El Rafle Matan Torah. Shayos Gilu Nala Yosef Lechem Yisrael was an unbelievable revelation to all the Yidden, and nevertheless, only Moshe Rabbeinu, because Mokim Gavos Rak Moshe Nigal Shal Rafle. Only Moshe Rabbeinu was able to go to the Arafel, to the cloud. Not because he was lower, because he was higher. Moshe Rabbeinu was kind of let in to the Arafel. Al derech zeh says that's the pshat. In other words, so what's the Arofel? Matan Torah, when the Yidden stood at Matan Torah, they got the most unbelievable revelation that never was and ever will be until Mashiach comes. And nevertheless, there was something higher than Matan Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu went into the Arofel, the cloud. The mystique of Hashem. Not the revelation of Hashem. What's higher than the revelation? I don't know, you can't use the word revealed because it's not revealed. It's connected to. He connected to, in a very conscious way, the mystery of Hashem, that kind of darkness. right? When Mashiach will come, al derech zeh, the bechina is Eicha Yoiv. That's the pasuk. Eicha is wow, Yoiv. Hashem is going to put a cloud on the Yidden. When Mashiach comes, Hu na le yoiser gam me'agilui shel chol Yisrael b'shas matan Torah. We will get, Mashiach comes, we will get the revelation of Moshe Rabbeinu God of Matan Torah. We didn't get it. The cloud, the arofel, the ov, the thickness, the mystique, the mystery of Hashem. And that's why Pasuk in Yeshayahu HaNovi says that Hashem will say to, the Novi says, wow, mi eile ka'ov tufena, who are these people that are floating like clouds? Not klipa, not darkness. Higher level, but higher than light. That's why it's called darkness. It's the essence of Hashem. Now also, I'm here. Okay. And that pasuk says, the Rebbe, when Yeshayahu was like wondering about this, right? About how, like, who are these people floating like clouds? I'll tell you this outside, because we're going to run out of time soon. Right, he says, "Mi Eile." Who are these people? He says that the words "Mi" and "Eile" is very, very, very exact. What is "Mi"? "Mi" means who. "Mi" is like a mystery sort of "Mi." So remember, once in Tanya, I explained to you there's what we call the hidden worlds and the revealed worlds. Right. Even now, even in the process of Gilui, there's these hidden worlds and which are also somewhat dark to us, but they're not essentially dark, right? But it's the spiritual world, the world of Bria, for example, right? Which in Davening is called darkness because it's higher than us. Yeah. So the world of Bria is called darkness. Why? But it's like me is the hidden worlds that we can't even relate to. It's too high for us. Then there's Eile. Eile means these. These means something you know. Eile refers to the real worlds. Mashiach will come. Is going to be a combination. They're going to merge. The hidden worlds and the revealed worlds will come together. How can that be? The one is unlimited and infinite, the one is finite. How are the two things going to come together? Because there will be an exposure to the ultimate cloud. The ultimate cloud is the transcendent part of Hashem. In other words, the essence of Hashem that is higher than both hidden and revealed. Higher than darkness and light. There will be such an exposure that we'll be flying on the cloud. The ultimate cloud. The ultimate thickness of the cloud. That's why we'll be able to bring together the world of Bria, the world of Asir, the hidden, the all come together. All be one. Coming from the power of that which is greater than both of them, which is the ultimate cloud, the ultimate darkness, but not darkness because it's dark, or not because it can't relate to people, it's ultimate darkness because it's defined as darkness, because it transcends both light and darkness. We don't know what it is. It's the mystique of Hashem. And he says, therefore, the pasuk here in Eicha, that's what's going to happen. Yoiv means it's going to be a cloud, right? So what's going to do with the word Eicha? Eicha means alas. But not always. It means alas, or how could it be like astounded, like befuddled? How could it be, right? It's like a cry. How could this happen? That's on the Golus interpretation of Eicha. But in the Geula interpretation of Eicha, Eicha means something completely different. First of all, Eicha is an amazement, like wow. And as the Marzelik explains like this, I'm gonna. Eicha actually is a word which symbolizes the revelation on all levels. Because the Samach Tzedek explains like this, that the Yud, Eicha is Aleph Yud Chofe, right? The Yud refers to Aseres HaDibros, right? Which is the revelation of Matan Torah. Ten Dibros is the revelation of Matan Torah. The highest revelation we've had till now. Chofe, in Chassidus, Chofe, which is an expression of lack of clarity, refers to Malchus. First, to Tzimtzum, essentially. A little bit like the hidden worlds and the revealed worlds, right? The Ten Spheres is like Ten Commandments was like revealed by Matan Torah, which comes together with the Ten Spheres and so on. Koi is when it's a little bit hidden. It's like this world. In other words, the world is created through Malchus, which is a bit of a hidden world, right? What's going to happen when Mashiach comes? The hidden worlds, just like by the spilling of the sea, it says the same thing. That was all temporary. When the sea split also, what's the idea of sea splitting? It says that the sea represents the hidden worlds, because you can't see the world underneath the water. Dry land represents the revealed worlds. The splitting of the sea means that the hidden worlds came together with the revealed worlds, right? Mashiach will come, that's to be the conscious state of being. Whatever is hidden from us now will be revealed, but not revealed, not that we have to exit this existence to go find it somewhere. Being people, remaining physical people, remaining in the world of Chaf Hei, in the world of Malchus, we will see the revelation will be the joining together of the infinite with the finite. Right? Why? Because it starts with the Aleph of Eicha. The Aleph is that cloud, the one Hashem. The ultimate darkness, the ultimate cloud. Yeah. Have a look what he says at the bottom. Have a look at the bottom of this page. He says, Ve'alef, the Aleph, Shalifne Hayud, which is before the Yud. L'mayle men, and therefore higher than the Yud on the next page. Moiral Bechinas, Shalemayle Mesa Sviris. It will, it, 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 it